It's my intention to make a statement and then for Nick and Tim to say a few words and answer questions on the climate change emission target. Once we've dealt with that, then we'll move on to the other issues of the day. So I'm pleased to announce today an emissions reduction target range of 10% of minus 10% to minus 20% below 1990 levels by 2020. This target will be tabled later today at the latest round of international climate change negotiations in Bonn, Germany. The commitment is conditional on a global agreement being secured that limits carbon dioxide equivalents to 450 parts per million and temperature increases to 2 degrees Celsius, effective rules on forestry, and New Zealand having access to international carbon markets. This target is internationally credible and both environmentally and economically responsible. It seeks to balance our economic opportunities with our environmental responsibilities. The target is going to be a big ask for New Zealand because our gross emissions are already 24% above our 1990 levels. However, I believe this target carefully balances our environmental responsibilities with a realistic assessment of the economic costs. Can I note here that a minus 10% reduction is very close to the level being achieved by Australia, which is minus 14%, and is considerably above the United States, which is 0% off a 1990 base, Canada, which is minus 3%, and Japan, which is minus 8%. Achieving these emissions reductions will mean higher costs for consumers and businesses for petrol and electricity. However, while it means some higher costs, I am not prepared to see an even higher target of, say, minus 40%, which our advice says will cost jobs for already struggling Kiwi families. I'm not prepared to see the jobs and financial security of Kiwi families undermined. This target will be met through a mixture of domestic emissions reductions, the storage of carbon in forests, and the purchase of emission reductions from other countries. So on that note, I'm going to turn to Nick and then Tim to make some comments, and then we're happy to answer any questions you might have.
The first point I'd want to emphasise is that this is an ambitious but achievable goal. If we look at the history, in the 1990s, New Zealand's emissions increased by 10%. In the course of the last decade, roughly including this year, the expectation is they'll rise by 40%. This target range effectively means that we are going to have to both catch up that 24% increase as well as reduce emissions by at least 10% and potentially 20%. Now, the rubber hits the road when we come to put the detail of the emissions trading scheme together. The Prime Minister led a substantive discussion today about the emissions trading scheme. To deliver this sort of target, it will be the primary policy instrument. The Cabinet has made substantive progress on that issue. It is our ambition to have the New Zealand details of the ETS settled by the time Tim goes to Copenhagen, because we see that as an additional step to the credibility of New Zealand's policy around climate change. Pass over to Tim quickly with those questions.
I think this puts us in a fine position internationally. I think people have got to understand this is not a parlour game that people are involved in. This is serious governments taking on serious measures. And you've heard from the Prime Minister the scale of the measures the United States, Canada and other countries have put on the table. I think our position of 10 to 20, it puts us in a very credible position, particularly since it's well understood by experts in this negotiation that given New Zealand's carbon footprint, it is particularly difficult for New Zealand. Now, the conditions around this, I won't talk at any great length about this because it's extremely complex, but they are the core of the responsibility the Prime Minister has given me. They will be very tough. This will not be resolved in Copenhagen, but I'm optimistic that at Copenhagen at the end of this year, we will certainly see some solid points of an agreement and we can build on that in the course of 2010. So I think we're in good shape, ladies and gentlemen.
I haven't got the documentation yet, but I'm assuming that the 20% level is dependent on whether developing countries are in or out and the 10% is, you know, to say, can you just outline what?
The conditionality around the 10 to 20% margin is very similar to that which Australia has put around their 14 to 24% margins on equivalent base years, i.e. the 10% is very much focused around a deal involving developing countries, and a more ambitious deal that involves the developing countries would have us stretch our domestic effort out to 20. The analysis that was done by NZIER Infometrics would indicate that the cost per person is about $1,400 per year at 2020, which is about $30 a week. That's a very broad macroeconomic analysis. And when we come down to designing the ETS, that will start fleshing out as to how much will that mean cost on petrol vis-a-vis power, vis-a-vis the cost for the broader economy. Well, I say, firstly, you know, good on Greenpeace. They've run a pretty strong campaign around their minus 40. That's their job. The government needs to balance those environmental ambitions with the economy. The truth is a 40% campaign below 1990 levels really equates to minus 64. That would have a devastating impact on the economy. The sort of analysis that I've seen is, you know, that means, you know, spending over $18 billion on renewable power stations, it would mean reducing stock numbers by more than a third, and I just think that is unrealistic and inconsistent with National's positioning. We said during the election campaign that three key things. One was the Prime Minister's minus 50 by 2050. This goal is consistent with that. Secondly, we said that it was about New Zealand doing its fair share, not being some idealistic world leader. That's not where we see it, particularly given New Zealand's emissions profile. And thirdly, we saw aligning New Zealand climate change policy more closely with Australia, and this goal announced today reflects that.
There's a lot of consider. I mean, there go the bulk of the tax cuts.
It is, and that's where this debate about an emissions target needs to carefully balance those economic and environmental factors. If we look at that economic analysis, it says that over the next 10 years, GDP is going to rise by $10,500 per person, but of that, $1,400 is going to be churned up meeting this climate change commitment. And that is the real rubber hits the road balance that the government's had to strike.
Well, it's 2020, cost, so if you've got a little bit of perspective. And there would be a cost to New Zealand doing nothing, and that's the point we've made all the way through, which is, I think New Zealanders expect our country to play our part. And I think internationally we're expected to play our part, and we certainly will. But I think there's got to be a healthy dose of realism here between those who would support our view of a minus 10% target, assuming the developing countries don't sign up to a lot, and the calls for a minus 40% reduction, which would have huge economic implications both to New Zealand and to the average pocket.
Did you consider a unilateral, unconditional target? Why decide not to offer one?
We did consider that carefully. Frankly, it seemed to me odd. You're putting forward a target based on failure of the negotiations. The reality is that if this becomes more difficult than I painted it, this will become apparent only over the years to come. I mean, nobody's going to declare failure in Copenhagen in 6 months' time. This will be a slow process. Now, I think the responsible approach is for us, if we get complete collapse of this negotiation, and, you know, that's not what we're aiming for, I think a responsible government then sits around and assesses the situation in the light of where people are. And I just think that any figure that countries are picking out of their ear now as to what they would do in the event of a collapse would be revisited anyway. So that's the position we took. I feel very comfortable with it. And we've got this 10 to 20 range, which I think puts us in a very respectable light.
You talked, Dr. Smith, about some of the analysis of what it would mean for 40% cut, such as $18 billion spent on energy, etc. What is this lower cut going to mean in terms of these investment in the sort of thing we've been doing here?
The Cabinet, in making the decision, has looked to three ways in which we can get the emissions down to that amount. First is in terms of domestic emissions reductions. And there are opportunities there in renewable energy, in the $323 million that the government invested in the Home Insulation Fund, the electric car technology legislation that was passed. There's a whole package of measures that will need to be part of that. The second is New Zealand does have some opportunity to offset emissions with respect to forestry, and to be able to reach this target, New Zealand is going to need to get a substantive program of tree planting between now and 2020. And the third option that New Zealand has is in terms of buying units internationally. So this is a responsibility target where if you don't achieve it domestically through emissions reductions and forestry, you do have the option to buy units internationally.
How do you see that splitting up between those three factors?
Well, some work has been done on that, and the work that's been done around the emissions trading scheme and the sort of benefits that we can achieve from that is pretty critical. We don't have exact numbers as to the breakdown of that. Some of the decisions that we'll make about the emissions trading scheme and other complementary policy will feed into that, albeit it is the government's view that at least the very first two and likely the third will be needed for New Zealand to meet these targets.
And how is the other council going to meet that cost? Is it going to be through higher power? You know, the $30 a week is going to be through higher prices, the petrol and power, is there some other breakdown?
Well, if we look at the emissions trading scheme, when that imposes a price on carbon, that will have direct flow through to the price of petrol and the price of electricity, so people will feel it that way. There's a further price for industry associated with the costs of coal burning gas in many of our industrial plants, the aluminium smelter, the steel mill, there's all a cost for those. But I also think we should say there's some opportunity, and that is with a settled emissions trading scheme. It is my view that you will get substantive increased investment in forestry, and that will offer job opportunities, for instance, in tree planting in a number of New Zealand's rural districts where that will make good economic sense.
Can I be clear? See, you seem to be saying that unless all five conditions in paragraph 2 are met, you do nothing.
No, that's not correct, Colin. What we will do is sit and review our position if the conditions are not met. Now, there's still going to be interpretation around whether those conditions have been met. I don't have the exact words around, but in front of me here, but the language about, you know, full responsibility targets by the major emitting developing countries commensurate with their ability to contribute here, I mean, that does require some interpretation. And that will be a decision that the Cabinet will take at the point at which it's clear what the nature of the deal is. So 10 to 20 is the range. The conditions are spelled out in general terms. There's still going to have to be some interpretation about that, and then we will have a decision, a very serious decision to take at some point, not this year, about what the final New Zealand offer will be.
But you literally see it, you're basically saying you have to have an effective set of rules for the DCF, which
Correct.
Is very ambitious.
I don't think it's very ambitious. I think that the existing framework, first of all, there are many elements here which are very important to preserve, such as voluntary accounting for pre-90 forests. That's a huge issue for New Zealand. I think there's much of the superstructure of those rules that will continue, and we can count on that. What we're seeking are improvements on this so-called emissions to atmosphere approach, which is potentially huge for New Zealand. If we can get that change, what this means in simple terms is the assumption is that when you cut a tree down, immediately all the carbon sequestered in that tree goes into the atmosphere. Now that's a ludicrous assumption for plantation forests that New Zealand operates, and our negotiators are working on that. We think we've got a chance of getting that. That would presumably weight a decision towards the upper end of the 10 to 20 range. So those are the sorts of considerations that we'll be using.
It's one of the conditions that enable you not to even commit to 10%.
Well, we'll look at the totality of those conditions, make a judgment, and then come up with a final figure.
Can you just clarify if it's $30 per person or per household?
$30 per person, per capita. That was the results of the NZDI infometrics analysis, and that was based around a 15% level of reduction, which is the mid-range of the 10 to 20, and that was based on a 2020 figure, and it was based on assuming an increase in GDP of $10,500 over the course from now till 2020.
That's G modelling is based on a whole bunch of assumptions, many of which are dubious, and you've been critiqued by these two economists. Are you comfortable about resting your case on that kind of top-down analysis? Are you going to offer anything like the Green's wedge bottom-up analysis about how much you can achieve sector by sector?
Yeah. It is true that any sort of economic analysis and trying to work out what that cost as compared with reduction trade-off is, and I accept that there are criticisms and critiques that can be made of the Infometrics NZI analysis. Having said that, the Green Party analysis did not provide any cost around theirs. And when I read statements of the sort that says that New Zealand can reach 100% renewables easily by 2020, I say that's incorrect. That's contrary to the advice. In fact, it would require the equivalent of 7 Clyde dams by 2020 and a capital investment of over $17 billion. That's not easy in my definition.
Will you be releasing any advice the government has had about a sector-by-sector breakdown of how you get to
In due course, we'll be releasing all of the advice that we're required to under the IA, albeit some of the advice in the Cabinet papers will be withheld, with the normal rules in the sense that it's tactical advice that's been provided by officials that would be unhelpful for New Zealand's position in the negotiations to release publicly. Other than that, all of it will be released in due course.
But that kind of bottom-up analysis has been part of your deliberation.
Certainly there's been analysis right across the board of the sorts of emissions reductions that we can be made. I have to say that the Treasury had recommendations to the Cabinet today that were a lot more cautious than our position. And one of the reasons for that was if you look on an equal cost basis, getting emissions reductions in New Zealand is going to be a whole lot more challenging than most other countries. And that's why I would describe the 10 to 20 range target that the government announced today as actually very ambitious for New Zealand.
Do you have a percentage target for the contribution that agriculture would be expected to make to meeting this target now?
No. There is, as part of the ETS, you will start seeing flagged out the sort of price impact. But trying to work out, you know, exact figures, ranges which could be achieved. And for instance, MAF officials have done quite a lot of work around some of the known technologies that is available around nitrogen inhibitors and what you might be able to gain by that. So some work has been done in that area, but I have to advise you that when it comes to making decisions, in the end it comes down to a political judgment as to what you think is achievable. And I suspect the difference between the government and the Green Party, for instance, is that they are, in my view, are a lot more vague about how they might be able to achieve those big emissions reductions that they promise.
But in general, is the government just committed to the principle of the current emitters and carry the bulk of the burden?
Correct. We remain committed to that all sectors, all gases, ETS. That is, it's not for the government to be picking winners at one sector over another, albeit, I have to say, and that's one of the challenges for the Cabinet we've been grappling with today, is that bringing agriculture into an ETS is hugely challenging, has not been done by any other country, and while we remain committed to doing it, we should not underestimate the scale of that challenge.
Okay, we're done on that. Thanks.